It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And that's when I knew that I had been kicked in the butt by love. Do you remember that old bit?
No.
That's from a old, that's an Eddie Murphy bit from an old Saturday Night Live sketch where he plays this weird romance novelist.
Oh.
And like that's one of the titles. He's like, he reads the intro and then he like shows, and the end of the sentence is always like the title of it, and that one was Kicked in the Butt by Love. I forget the character's name though. I just recently found out, apparently at some point he actually apologized and said he regrets all those really fucked up homophobic jokes that he did like during Raw and Delirious.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I was like, cool. Good for him.
Yeah.
Because those were awful. As a kid, I thought they were hilarious because I was properly socialized. And gay people were funny. But, yeah. So that was good.
Funny to laugh at.
Yeah. No, I didn't know there were really, like, gay comedians at that point. I didn't know they were. I thought they were limited to flight attendant and I guess in my head, like, there was, like, a professional gay protester was a job, maybe? I don't know. I didn't think about it a lot, because I was a horrible suburban white boy. Anyway, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that is going to reveal the true identity of the Loch Ness Monster. I am Tony.
And I am William, and this is episode 351.
And the Loch Ness Monster is, in fact, our very own Azhatalin.
Who'd have thunk it? Until he said, I'm going to need about 350.
Yeah, he said, I'm going to need... I didn't even tell you. He did it more than once.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Well, of course, because he's a long-ass monster. So, you don't just do it once.
So after the last episode aired, and we talked about the Loch Ness Monster asking for about 350, I got an email on behalf of Azhatalin from some program that I'm not familiar with that says Azhatalin has requested you pay him $3.50. And I told you about it, and you're like, now we can prove he's the Loch Ness Monster. But then later on Facebook, there's something on Facebook. So, and it was like Azhatalin is asking you to pay him $3. I was like, the fuck? Loch Ness Monster? Get out of there. For those of you just joining us, welcome to the Loch Ness Monster Hunt Hour. We're going to go hunt Azhatalin in real time. Of course, the episode's only an hour long, and it'll take that long to get there. And I don't actually know his address, so this won't be that good. No, here's how the show works. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Folks like yourselves, cool people, also sometimes the Loch Ness Monster, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, questions, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them, manifests physically within the hat itself. Servants, draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour, that is the entire show.
The entire show? Well, except for a whole bunch of stuff.
Except for the first 50 minutes.
Yeah.
So, before we get into the week and stuff like that, and there's definitely stuff to talk about, I want to talk for a minute about the book. For those of you who are getting ready to turn it off now, because that one where we talked about it, it's not going to take that long. Also, it's not going to be about the inside of the book. I'm not so you won't have to just tune out.
Oh, this was the last day. This was the day people were gonna sort of a deadline
in
for people.
Theory, okay, yes, okay. It is. I forgot and that's about part that. Of what I want to talk about. Several people have not yet. Five, I believe. One is my massage therapist, and this was part of the plan. She's doing it from a hard copy, and we are meeting on Monday for an appointment anyway, so she's going to give it back to me then, in theory. I have not spoken to her since I gave it to her.
Okay.
But in theory, that's what's going down.
Okay.
Another two are friends of mine who don't listen to the podcast, so there's no real point in making fun of them. One of them did just get back to me on it, and I'm not super worried because my current plan, you see that sort of bar in the kitchen that's covered in, like, canned food and stuff like that? A portion of that this weekend is going to turn into a home office for me.
Oh.
Because I can't really write on this. It's not quite big enough, and also it's falling apart because of that hinge problem. But I bought a monitor and a wireless mouse and full-size keyboard.
Oh.
And so I'm going to hook them up there, and then I won't have to actually, like, open this and stuff, although I still will have to for the podcast. And so Monday I plan to actually start rewriting, so there's some wiggle room. Another one of them is the producer, who is not done, but who is, in theory, finishing it as we speak.
As we speak.
I hear her singing along with shit in there, so I'm not sure I believe it, but tonight is theoretically when she finishes, and she's getting pretty close. And another one who's not done is Jazz, who is actively fucking gaslighting me in an attempt to get an extra day.
Taking cues from her students, no doubt.
She sent me what she had, which is about halfway, not quite halfway. And she said, I'm going to have the other half tomorrow. There's 31 days in November, right?
Did she really say
she
that?
She said that. It goes on.
She's good.
And I wrote back and I was like, 30 days have September, April, June, and November. Nope, you're out of luck. And I was like, but it should be fine. You're not the only one, and I don't plan to start the rewrite till Monday. And she writes back and she's like, yeah, 30 days has September, April, June, and December. It fits, so it's true.
It's in the post-fact world.
God damn it. So, yeah.
She feels like there's 31 days in November.
But I have been getting a lot of editing back. It's very interesting to see what y'all have in common and what y'all have different,
mm-hmm.
especially in the realm of, like, copy editing stuff. Everybody clearly has their thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, mm-hmm. like, you had very specific things that you caught every time. Mm-hmm. I just was reading Jazz's earlier, and she's got, in particular, one word choice where I used slightly the wrong one, and she corrects that every time. Other people have hit a lot of my punctuation stuff, and you had some general stuff, but some people, like, every single one they had to, and I find that interesting. There have been a couple instances of one editor saying this part doesn't work and a different editor saying I absolutely love this part, so I'm gonna have to be the tiebreaker there. I do want to talk about something kind of serious that you're already somewhat familiar with, just because this is where I do that kind of stuff. So, as I alluded to, arguably passive-aggressively talked about a while back, one editor really did not seem to like my book.
Yeah.
And they were really kind of mean about it. And it really messed me up. And you can attest to that, because I went to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a good couple of days where that, and combined with the shittiness that is the world right now, threw me into just such a depression spiral. And it was the second edited copy I had read, yours being the first. I'm pretty sure if it had been the first, the book would be dead.
Oh, gosh.
That being said, if it had been the 10th, I probably just would have found it funny. Like, it being the second was a lot of it. I believed that this individual, with whom I am good friends, took a long time to sort of warm up to me. He's not somebody who just immediately gets close to people. And I was very worried that if I pointed this out to them, they would shut down and it would screw up our friendship. So I very selflessly decided was not ever going to mention it to them.
Okay.
I neglected one thing. I can't do that. I can't not say things.
Okay.
I am terrible at that. And meanwhile, I wasn't doing it for quite a while.
Right.
And it just festered. I literally would be laying down, getting ready to go to bed, and I'd be having, like, arguments in my head with this person about it. Drove me crazy. And this is a member of my gaming group. And so there was some conversation that sort of went around there, and we were talking about it more and more, and it was getting a little awkward, and finally I was just like, okay, I'm just going to talk about it. And I spilled it all out right there. Other friends tried to sort of mediate things, and I got really mad at them. I yelled at a bunch of people, and I finally left.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, walked out. And I was that person's ride, so I had to check somebody else could take them home. And then I left. And immediately felt horrible, of course. And I've since then, I've had to write huge apologies to all of them, but especially this person. For a couple things. One is, I didn't take into account the fact this was the very first time this person had done anything like this. And so, if one is kind enough to assume that someone is doing it in good faith, which if they're a friend of yours and they're editing your book for free, you probably should assume that.
Sure.
Instead of being upset by what they say, you should stop and be like, what were they trying to get at here that they just phrased in a way that you were sensitive to? Because odds are they weren't trying to make fun of you this.
That's, yeah. Right.
So how can we look at this? And then the other thing is, well, I mean, just a general concept. This friend of mine, I don't know, maybe I should, is a grown-up. Which means, instead of the bullshit I was pulling, I should have come to them and been like, I was really bothered by the stuff you wrote, and I feel like it's a, you're saying things and you mean something, and I'm reading things and I think something else. Let's talk about it.
Right.
That would have been great.
Sure.
And that would have given, shown that person the respect I have for them as being a grown-up. In the process of this, and the things they have said and some conversations we've had to have about it, I learned that I think I've been acting on a lot of misapprehension about this person and how they operate and how relationships are with them and stuff. I think I'd been making some weird assumptions that I don't think are true.
Okay.
So
but you no longer think are true.
Yes, that I no longer think are true. Luckily, I think our friendship is cool. I mean, I checked with that; they think so too. We are, for the time being, gonna just sort of put their editing on hold. I still intend to go through it and see what I can glean from it.
Sure.
But I was like, if you want, we can put in the work and we can sit down and hash out. And they were like, this was to help you, and I feel like at this point it's hindering you, so let's just put a pin in it for now.
Okay.
And I'm like, that's fine. But yeah, I think that we're okay, and I intend to approach our relationship differently than I have, in a way that will hopefully be more fair and respectful to them, and more useful, because, yeah, a lot of it was me sort of keeping things back out of worry of hurting their feelings or something, and that's not how I normally operate anyway.
Sure. Were you aware of how upset you were? I mean, did you maybe think that you weren't quite as upset as you actually were?
I mean, I didn't think I was going to explode like that.
Yeah,
but I mean, I think it's one of those things. It's been building up and building up the pressure. And I was like, okay, we'll just let a little bit up.
Yeah, right, right.
And I mean, then there's a lot of other stuff. Yeah, it's funny. I'm just going to say this out here, and you should know up front, this is not me fishing, and I don't think you can explain it to me in a way that's going to make sense, but I don't understand why people are friends with me. I think I'm a shitty, shitty friend. And I mean that in the sense that if I knew somebody like me, I would stop being friends with them. Interestingly enough, this experience has taught me, I think I'm a decent husband. So that's good.
Yeah, that's good.
But I think I'm a shitty friend. And luckily, I'm with it enough to know that I don't get to decide for people. That urge is there, you know. I'm going to stop being friends with this person to protect, for their own good.
Oh, yeah.
And I was smart enough to know, like, no, they're fucking grown-ups. They get to decide who they're friends with.
That's right.
And they're all still friends with me. And but this is the thing, like, it is not uncommon after gaming for me to then have to write an apology to people the next day. This shit happens at gaming. It's bad. And I don't know why it keeps, people who knew me later don't always know this, but I grew up having quite a temper.
You've said that.
Yeah. And a lot of that is improved with medication. Some of that is improved with maturity, I like to think.
Sure.
But it still happens sometimes, and certain things can do it, and it's awful. And there's never an excuse for it. And after I did it, I always feel horrible. But that's the thing. Then it happens again. Like, there's that whole, you know, you need to work to try and improve things. And in my head, I think I am, but I'm like, I don't see evidence of that.
Well, here's what I've observed over, if you don't mind me saying so, over the last several years we've been podcasting together.
Keep in mind, I'm on my best behavior during a podcast.
You care about a lot more things now than you did when we started this.
That is very true.
And I think I've noticed that it takes its toll.
Yeah. Because but I mean, this is another good example. I yell at you a lot, too.
Well.
Now, admittedly, in ours, it's more an enthusiastic thing. But there are times where I yell at you out of sheer frustration. And that's not appropriate.
Well, I mean, it's not like you're the only one. But
That's how a lot of people in power in government lately have been explaining shit. Just because other people are bad at shit does not excuse you being bad at shit.
But I think, though, the general trend is... I think the general trend is good, though. Like, when you and I first met, I think the idea that you would even be trying to write a book was pretty far away from your,
Well, and that's, from your mind. That's another realization I've had in all of this is, as much as I'm aware that this is a big deal to me and I have a lot of anxiety about it, I think it was an order of magnitude greater than I'm aware. And it makes sense, because being a writer is the one consistent when I grow up thing
for
me.
Sure.
I always wanted to be a writer. As I got older, I always intended to be a writer. Probably a decade or maybe even 15 years ago, I decided that was never going to happen. And so the fact that, you know, whether or not there are financial dividends, it is happening, is a big deal to me. And, like, bigger than I'm aware of a lot of times, I think.
Well, you've always struck me as a person who, when he cares about something, he really cares about it. You know, you don't halfway care about it. You care about it. And I've often wondered, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, if there were some times when there were things that...
Kind of gassy tonight, people. So I apologize for the burps here.
There were things that I thought you might care about, or I was surprised you didn't care about, or probably a good example is the whole writing thing. As I got to know you, it always seemed to me so obvious that it's something that you could be or should be doing, and you, like you said, you wanted to do it, that maybe there were some things that you held at arm's length because caring about them would be too painful.
I don't know. It's something to think about. I'm not sure.
Well, it certainly, as these things be... This, what I've noticed is there's been like a cost-benefit shift where, okay, not caring about that thing allowed me to not get emotionally invested in it.
Yeah, you don't fail if you don't try.
Well, but also other things. Political things, for example. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But then what I'm noticing is your priorities are shifting as you're realizing that there's a cost to holding things at arm's length also.
Yeah, yeah. I in general, I feel like I've been reappraising and streamlining my priorities in life.
Yeah, yeah.
And very specifically sort of trying to whittle them down a bit. Like, what are the couple of things,
mm-hmm.
concepts that I really believe in to live my life? What are the few things that I really want out of my life? And sort of to my surprise, because it feels like it would be not significant enough to be high on the list, but writing is, well, and as I've talked about, in general, is I want to tell stories.
Yeah,
and I think this is the best way to do that
for
me.
And in my opinion, I think the world needs you and people like you to tell stories. I mean, that's one of the biggest problems that I observe in the world today is that there aren't enough stories told by certain types of people or people with a certain perspective. We've just got too many stories told by one type of people. Now, that's happened because of systemic, you know, sexism, racism, all kinds of other things.
Mm-hmm.
But those people still exist out there. right? Yep. And we have the internet, you know, and we have ways that those other voices could be heard. So I'm grateful that you've come to a point where you're doing this. And I think maybe if you notice that your emotions are difficult lately, my observation is that you're taking on more things to think about and care about than you used to. Well, so that would happen,
I think. And in some ways, I think this is making this stuff more important to me. All the shit that's got... It's really important to me to get out a book that I think doesn't perpetuate some of the bullshit that's
sure,
out there.
Sure, that's right.
But right now, actually, I'm just really excited about Becca James Lowenstein instead. Which, by the way, I came up with the great little one-sentence pitch for it that I think explains what I hope Becca James Lowenstein is going to be.
Okay.
Terry Pratchett meets the Riddick movies.
That's interesting.
Because this is what I'm telling you. Becca James Lowenstein stuff is going to be way more humorous than Odd Wings, way more foul language, way more violence, way less substance. It's meant to be pure adventure escapism. And way more like specifically comedic. and very much that large, now admittedly I hope I don't do as shitty as the Riddick movie did, but that large scale space opera kind of vibe.
Sure, sure.
That's what I'm shooting for those. But I have to wait for now. Hopefully, yeah, like I said, I'm hoping to start on Monday with a rewrite, and I'm terrified because I remember how bad the rewrite was before, but Trish recently pointed out to me several things. One, I'm not going to be writing a lot out of whole cloth. I'm just going to be extending things that are already there. And two, I can talk with her about it, and talk with you about it, and talk with other people about it. So, in theory, that'll help me from getting too stuck.
Well, again, I said this before, I think one piece of good news is that, unlike with my first drafts, where I practically have to invent whole new characters and everything to make stuff work, I don't think you're going to have to do any of that.
I don't think I'm going to have to change anything about the general outline.
Yeah,
and
right.
I'm frankly shocked.
That's great, though.
But yeah, no, it's wonderful. I am hoping to have this draft done by the end of January.
Really?
I feel like that is ambitious. But I don't... I feel like the other editors are just waiting too long. Like, I told them, and I'm like, now you'll have to wait. Mm-hmm. And I even told them it'll be sometime after the new year, but I'm like, it may even be a month after the new year. But I'm really hoping, and part of it, having a space and everything, I can try and do it, you know, write every day kind of thing. Because I want to do that, and then I let them look at it. And at that point, I'm probably going to start my world building on Beck James Lowenstein. And then, once I get it back from them, a third rewrite... or fourth, depending on how you count. But I'm guessing that one will be much smaller.
Yeah, sure.
At that point. And then I'm hoping it's sort of done. And then I'll go on to Becca James Lowenstein, Queen of the Space Pirates.
Or done enough to mark it out and stuff.
Yeah. Done enough to move on to another book.
Sure, also. Sure, right.
And then that's the point where I have to start considering what I want about publishing. One of my editors worked in publishing for many years and keeps asking me all these questions that I'm like, I don't know yet. And I'm purposely not thinking about that yet. From the sublime to the ridiculous in terms of writing. So you recall, I told you there was a trilogy I was reading because I had read a short story set in that world. And it was a sci-fi and magic combined space opera thing.
Sure.
And I was reading the books now, and they didn't seem to be in that setting.
Okay.
I'm still reading those books. I've read two of them now. I'm probably going to finish it because I want to see how the trilogy ends. But I did a little more digging on this guy because this guy writes a ton.
Okay.
And I finally figured it out. Different series, and I know which one it is. And the reason it's like this is the series I'm reading is called the Void Wraith Trilogy.
Okay.
And one of the books in it is called Void Wraith.
Okay.
And that's the prime antagonist. That's what they're called, Void Wraith. It's called the Void Wraith Trilogy. The short story was called Void Mage. And they wrote this takes place in the Void Wraith universe.
Sure.
Does not. There's a different series called, I think, Magitech Chronicles. There's two of them. And the second of them is called Void Worm.
Oh.
And when I look at the blurbs for those, I'm like, that's the setting.
Mm.
But now I'm like, I don't know that I fucking care. I don't know that I have it in me to read those two.
Yeah, well,
I'm gonna finish this out because I want to see how this ends at this point. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I'm even gonna be able to. It's like, God damn it.
Well, it's,
how did nobody catch this?
There's a lot of, I mean, this kind of thing has been done by lots of other people. So I mean, it wouldn't be like you're copying one specific person.
Well, no, and it's not because I wanted to use it. I was just interested as a reader.
Oh yeah, sure.
Yeah. No. And that's not that. No, Becky James has only seen no magic.
Yeah.
That's not happening in Becky James. none of that. A lot of. I mean, it'll be. It's going to be a lot of sort of science fantasy. It's going to be very soft sci-fi. So I mean, it'll have Arthur Clarke magic, but
sure,
not real magic.
I'm just really excited that you're doing this stuff. Honestly, I am.
Me too.
I wasn't. You know, I again, it's something I've always known that you could do and that you, part of you wanted to do, but I didn't know if you ever would do it, but I hoped you would.
There's a lot of work to do, but yeah, I'm excited about it, so that's good. Let's see, what else real quick? Let's talk about the week, or I guess 2 weeks. How was your Thanksgiving?
Oh, you...
2 weeks.
Well, we were at home on Thanksgiving Day. Oddly, you know, all the rest of my family were at their, like, wives' places, and my sister went to a friend's for Thanksgiving, so we didn't go anywhere on Thanksgiving Day. That's the first for a long, long time. But Saturday we did, and it was just the same as any other Thanksgiving, just on Saturday.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was that. We did see Justice League, as you know.
Oh, yes.
And that was an interesting experience. Because we both, well, I mean, as I explained to you already, a lot of the problematic stuff related to Wonder Woman, you know, was there and aggravating. But she was good, you know, just as a character.
Yeah.
And really, all the characters were good. Batman was, I thought, a better version of Batman. Superman was great.
In general, that the performances were quite
good. Well, and the characterizations and the interactions between the characters, like, I very much do want to see another Justice League with these actors and these characters. I very much want to see standalone movies of all these particular versions of these characters. Maybe less so with Batman, but everybody else, fine. Flash, everyone's talking about, you know, how Flash really lightened up the film or whatever, but they also talk about him telling jokes, or they'll say he's more of a Wally West Flash than a Barry Allen Flash, and for non-DC fans, that means Wally West is the Flash after Barry Allen, and he jokes a lot. He's kind of like a trickster type of character. And that's less, Barry Allen's less like that. But the thing is, Barry Allen wasn't telling jokes in the movie. I mean, he played a prank on one person at the beginning. What was funny about him was he was kind of neurotic. Mm. He was doing all these, it was kind of like Woody Allen instead of Barry Allen, you know. Now,
not a great comparison these days, but okay.
I suppose not. But anyway, now, in his standalone movie, they're going to have to not have some of that stuff, because a lot of that was lack of confidence and stuff, right?
Yeah.
He's got to grow out of that.
So they give it the Spider-Man Homecoming treatment. It's fine.
Basically, that's what it was. But, so I would like to see his character be a little different in a standalone movie, but I enjoyed the film. It felt like watching one of those Justice League cartoons from the 90s, or like a really good CW show. The problem is, you don't pay $10 a ticket to watch a CW show or a live-action cartoon. And so I totally understand people who aren't fans of the material not liking the movie, because visually it was terrible. The visuals were terrible, and I don't just mean that CGI. I mean, there was a scene that looked like, it felt like you were watching television, because, you know, they dress TV sets differently than film sets, and they use different camera angles, fewer camera angles in TV. And it even felt worse than that. It felt like soap opera, because something about soap opera is they don't get very many takes. Mm. And it didn't feel like the actors in the scene really got their best.
I always love take. That where I see something and I'm like, that was really the best take that you got away with?
These two actors had to have some more time to really understand how their lines bounced off of one another and everything. Yeah. You could tell they didn't get very many takes.
Probably, I mean, because it's a Franken movie.
Oh, my gosh.
So, I mean, they probably were rushed, depending on what was involved at the time.
When I read a lot of the reviews, it seemed to me that every complaint was ultimately traced back to visuals, because like people complained about Steppenwolf as a villain. Mm-hmm. Well, I think about a third of those people wouldn't have complained at all if he just looked better. Mm-hmm. And another third would have mentioned that he was kind of not a very well-developed character, but they would have been okay with it. And people were talking about the story being all over the place and uneven, but the fact of the matter was, you know, when you go from one shot to another and it's visually jarring, yeah, it can really take you out. And also, there were some shots where you really needed an establishing shot between, and a lot of people don't realize when they miss an establishing shot how much you need them.
Yeah.
So my opinion is if they had fixed the visuals in this film, that the film would be like 75% on Rotten Tomatoes, and people would generally be saying it's a hit, even though, you know, the story wasn't super well developed. But how could it be with so many superheroes or whatever?
Yeah.
But what's interesting is, and this is what I've been telling people since I saw it, but very recently, a person who worked on the visual effects for the film has anonymously posted some things on Reddit about how frustrated they were in being rushed to get this out.
Mm.
And how with a reasonable amount of time, they could have fixed all of those problems and the film would have been fine.
Welcome to the video game industry. Wait, this is a movie. Sorry.
Well, exactly. That's another part of the problem was some of it looked like a video game instead of a movie.
No, and that's a classic issue.
Yeah, that's right.
Video game industry.
Well, so then the question comes, well, why didn't they then? You know, if this person who's working in the VFX department knows that they could have fixed all this stuff and it could have been, you know, a relative hit, why didn't they do that?
Because nobody asked them.
Well, there are some reasons that are coming to light.
Or if they did, they didn't care.
There are some reasons that are coming to light. Now, the first thing, if you think about it, you'll realize is this movie was already over budget by then.
Oh, of course.
And this is the kind of thinking I think was going on in the executive offices. They were thinking, all right, if we release this movie, the visuals are so bad, like, you know, taking out Henry Cavill's mustache.
Well, that's a whole debacle.
So terrible.
Itself.
So terrible. But they
didn't need to be for a lot of reasons.
They knew that this film was not going to do as well, but this is probably what they were thinking. Well, it'll still be better than Batman v Superman, which just about everyone agrees it is. Mm-hmm. It'll still get better Rotten Tomato scores, which it has.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a 41, which isn't good, but BVS is like 27 or something.
Yeah.
And the audience one is 86 or something for this Justice League and like 63 for BVS.
Mm-hmm.
So the thought was, if people like it better and it gets better Rotten Tomato scores, then it'll at least make as much money than that. So why should we spend $30 million more to fix the graphics? If
it's supposed to be a tentpole film, and it is considered an assumption nowadays that if you delay an opening, that means there's something wrong.
No, that's true. And that was something that was...
At least the quote-unquote popular wisdom.
That was brought to light, too, that a lot of executives feared it would signal something really wrong.
No, I think you're right. I'm guessing that's...
But there's another piece of information. Because what an insight, like some executive somewhere has said that the top executive of Warner Brothers and I guess the new top executive of Warner Brothers Movies, because the Greg Silverman left last December, that they wanted to get their bonuses, their 2017 bonuses, and if they delayed the film, it would go into 2018, which kind of, actually, that begs the question, because why couldn't they just wait till the end of 2018 to get their bonus? Because after the AT&T merger with Time Warner, they might not be with Warner Brothers anymore.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, that's just great.
Mm.
You rush this thing so you can get a bonus that you don't think you're going to be in working for Warner's when the bonus comes out. That seems very plausible to me that's what happened.
Absolutely.
And very, very disappointing. Also, it was mentioned that Greg Silverman, I think it's Silverman, wanted to get rid of Zack Snyder after BVS, before they had even shot anything for Justice League.
I wanted to get rid of Zack Snyder since long before BVS.
But when he left late last year, most people were thinking, oh, this is Warner Brothers shaking up leadership to make everything better, but really they were getting rid of the one guy who wanted to...
He was
to,
like, it's him or me, and they were like, okay, bye.
And they're getting rid of the one guy who might have been able to fix it. So So, oh man,
and that's the problem.
This is just terrible.
Zack Snyder is a shitty filmmaker overall, but I think numbers wise, he's quite bankable. So,
well, and I don't know what's going to happen now. James Wan, is that the guy's name? He's already done. Basically, he's done. He's finished with
Aquaman. Yeah.
So that's going to happen. That's going to be, and they're definitely going to make another Wonder Woman.
Well, and I think this is making enough money, so it's going to be fine.
Oh, they think it's going to lose like maybe 50 to 100 million?
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
I think the problem is overseas, because Batman v Superman and Pirates of the Caribbean, both of those films are examples of films that did so bad here.
Yeah, but
made tons of money overseas. Well, think about this for a second. I was thinking about this. When I watch,
you might think about this too much.
When I watch a movie from, you know, Japan or South Korea or even China, you know, and they've got subtitles or they got dubbing or whatever, you know, a lot of times what overcomes the weakness of trying to get past that language and culture barrier are the amazing visuals.
Mm.
So why wouldn't it be the same way for people watching U.S. films? So they'll come. And the visuals are the thing that overcome that language and culture barrier, but the visuals are terrible. Yeah. So far, it's not doing as well.
And even people who kind of liked this movie have agreed that it looked really bad.
Oh, it was terrible. Oh, just absolutely awful.
From the ridiculous to the sublime, we, on the Friday after Thanksgiving, saw Thor Ragnarok.
Oh, yeah, you said you were going to. How was that?
You did not see it.
No.
Okay. This is weird to be able to say this about a movie, but have you seen the trailer?
Yeah.
It's that.
Oh, okay.
It's straight up that, which to me is a good thing.
Sure.
It was, even for a Marvel Cinematic Universe movie, it was very heavy on the comedy.
Yeah.
It was a very four-color sort of vibe.
Mm-hmm.
You know how they kept playing the Led Zeppelin in the trailers?
Mm-hmm.
That they literally play that track in two different places in the movie. Yeah, it was enjoyable. To the degree that I'm pretty sure it's going to be forgettable in the long run for me. But brilliant cast. Kate Blanchett was probably my favorite villain in a superhero movie, because superhero movies have these really fucking forgettable villains.
Yeah,
and they did well with her. Carl Urban in the weirdest little role ever. He plays a guy named Scourge, who's kind of just this slimy guy who, when the villain shows up, he's the only one who's like, okay, yeah, I'll join you. And he's this bald guy with this weird accent. It's pretty hilarious. I really hope they continue. Speaking of which, you seen the trailer for Infinity War?
Yeah.
Holy shit. Way better than I expected that to look. Very excited about that. Yeah. Although I'm more excited about Black Panther. But I was very excited to see a bunch of Black Panther people in Infinity War.
Sure.
Jeff Goldblum, I don't even know what to say when Jeff Goldblum is always the perfect choice for every role that Jeff Goldblum is put in.
Pretty much.
With the exception of, I think there was a period in the 90s where he was kind of doing some leading man shit that did not work.
Oh.
But otherwise, yeah, I think like I remember seeing a couple of movies. No, he was fine in that.
Okay.
No, I mean like adventure things, and he gets the girl was playing the leading man.
Oh, the leading man,
yeah,
sure.
Leading man, capital L, capital M.
Right, right.
And I don't think it was ever quite a good fit, but it's all just sort of vague memories. Generally speaking, like, his agent or he just have an eye for it. I mean, he'll do all sorts of shit, but he never does a thing where I'm like, why did he do that? Because he's always perfect, and he's perfect in this. Hilarious in this. My favorite character, and I'm not sure it's anybody else's favorite character, is a giant man made out of rock named Korg, who is voiced by the director, so he has this New Zealand accent. And he's just, you've seen this stuff, like, Thor gets thrown into a gladiatorial thing or whatever.
Sure.
He's one of the gladiators that's already there. He's sure. Like, hey, I'm Korg, good to meet you. And he's just, like he does a bunch of stuff, but he's always just, like, super chill and chatty. But he's like, hey, bro, we're going to get on that ship and get out of here. You want to come with? I love it. And there are tons of, he makes one joke, but there are tons of subtext jokes about rock, paper, scissors as related to him.
Okay.
And I didn't even catch all of them. And then afterwards, my sister-in-law was like, did you notice that? And I'm like, oh my God, that's so cute. For those of you excited to see Doctor Strange in there, cool, but it's barely a cameo, in my opinion. It's like one scene. But it's fun. It's a fun scene. good Thor Loki interaction. This is a good Thor movie. And here's the thing: this is clearly the last Thor movie, because that's how it's. He's gonna do Infinity War and he's gonna do Avengers 4 and then he's out. And I think Hiddles is out too, because all of these guys are sick of doing this shit.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, Trish and I are seriously thinking after Avengers 4, the MCU will continue on. I'm not sure we'll stick with it after that. I don't know, but it was a good parting solo film for him. Like, it was a good last film for him. Some of the plot was pretty vague, you know, believe in yourself bullshit that always happens, but it was good. It was good. I liked it quite a lot, and I enjoyed the time, and it didn't seem long, and it was over, like, 2 hours or whatever, so, but I didn't feel like it, so I was pleased with that. Video games. I finally finished Final Fantasy 15. Oh, that story was a mess.
It was?
Yeah, and I keep thinking that Final Fantasy has just crawled up its own butt too far now, but what it really is it's a Franken game. Originally, it was Final Fantasy 13 Versus, which was still in the whole universe of the Final Fantasy 13 games, and then it became Final Fantasy 15, so they had to change huge parts of it, but then kept huge parts of it, so it was just sort of cobbled together in a story that's not great. And on top of that, there's a lot of cross-promotion, so there's the game. There's also a movie that's, like, sort of a prequel to it and sort of a side story.
Mm.
There was also a short web series that was a bunch of prequels about the main characters.
Mm.
There was also a couple of different spin-off games. There was also DLC that they put in because certain characters are gone for a while, and so there's DLC about what happens to them. And consequently, playing through the game, there's a lot of shit that doesn't make sense. Unless you did everything else. Mm. I went to Wikipedia and I was like, oh, that explains that, but it made no sense at the time. Mm. And some characters that I think because they had to sort of retrofit things were just really throwaway. And yeah, it was a mess. The gameplay was fun, though. I think I can recommend the game. I'm done with it. I'm not touching any DLC or anything. Put 75 hours into it. Now I am playing two games. And the reason being, one of them is What Remains of Edith Finch, which is a little indie game. I, having just started it, I'm going to recommend it to you.
Okay.
The gameplay style is very much gone home.
Okay.
Instead of journal entries, it has this weird effect where as you go along, the story just gets narrated and the words appear, and they are physical things. So, like, they appeared floating in the air, and I actually walked through them, and all the letters fell on the ground. It's weird. But it's... it's one of those things. I am someone. I'm not even sure who I am. And I'm reading basically a diary, which is taking me back to the story about this family home. And we're sort of going through the family home, uncovering stories about our ancestors and what happened. And there's some, clearly some dark shit gonna happen. Because the first story involved me playing a little kid who then turned into a cat, who then turned into a bird, who then turned into a shark, who then turned into a tentacled monster who ate people before she woke up.
Mm.
And she died in 1947, so I'm not even sure. But I think, yeah, it's going to be one of those, like, uncover the dark secrets of your family and stuff. But it's very, it's gorgeous. And it's very much that you're walking through it to know the story kind of thing. And I'm enjoying that a lot. Somebody very strongly recommended it, so we're doing it. And I think it's a pretty short game. But the thing is, Trish wants to watch it. And so... when she's around, that's what we'll play.
Sure.
When she's not around, I've started Infamous Second Son. I really liked the first two Infamous games. I'm having a little difficulty with this one. The controls don't feel great, and I'm not good at it, but I'm trying to remind myself, I think I was not good at the Infamous games 2 at first. But it's fun to be back into a thing that's like more action-y. I'm, you know, climbing on buildings, doing the parkour shit and all that, so that's
right,
fun.
Right.
I think that's all I really have at this point, so you should probably, you know,
grab a
hat, have some questions, and a hat, you know, some things to talk about.
This is addressed to me.
Alright, I'm gonna go take a break.
William.
Is it from you also?
It's from Craig.
Craig.
In terms of RPGs, you've mostly mentioned playing indie games. Have you played D&D at all?
Caulfield has won. No, he has not.
No, I have not.
Nope. See,
never played it. When I was a kid, or I shouldn't say when I was a kid. When I was younger, I was in high school. I wrote songs and I did music with a friend of mine, and his brother played D&D and wanted me to play with him, but that never ever happened. And the games that we play at, mostly the games I play is at this playing in public thing.
Yeah, and it's Dave Vid.
Yeah, which is...
And Dave Vid is utterly obsessed with indie games.
Yeah, they're mostly pickup. They're mostly pickup games of various kinds.
I'm still kind of amazed that he's married, because he's so focused on indie games. Well, but to be fair, his wife's a gamer, too.
It's hard to imagine a D&D game as a pickup game. I mean, you know, like... Where people come and a bunch of strangers get together and play.
There are versions of it, but it's a very different vibe. You usually don't make your own characters and all sorts of stuff.
I mean, because the fact of the matter is, I've only done a few campaigns, and they're also like once a month, maybe 4 months in a row, we'll get together. So it's not even the type of thing where I'm getting together with people every week or anything like that.
Yeah, Dave, it is very. This is weird because this term has been misused, I think, but he's into metagaming in that I think he's really interested in what is the goal of this game and how well does this game achieve that goal.
Well, in terms of what kind of experience.
Exactly. And there's a lot of us who are like, no, just find a system you like, and then how you run it is what determines the experience. But he's like, no, the system matters, the nature of the game, like that kind of stuff impacts it, and he's not wrong. I just don't care enough to do it usually. Also, Craig, you're not gonna like this, but D&D's not that good. Like, I mean, it's fine. You can totally run it, and it'll be great. But there's nothing about it that, like, you can go your whole life not playing D&D, and that's fine.
Well,
It is what it is, but it's very crunchy. I suppose if you were very big into the battle mats and stuff like that, it's better for that, I suppose. But for actual role-playing experience, it's not great. And this is somebody who has played the 80s remake of the basic system, and I played some AD&D 2nd Edition, and I have not played, but I have... listened extensively to other people playing 4th ed, and I've played 5th ed, so I mean, and I've played various D20 games, so I kind of know the systems involved. None of them are that great.
Now, I have played video games based on Dungeons & Dragons. Yeah. Baldur's Gate on the PS2, you know, things like that, and I think my wife would love it if they made an open world craft your own character similar to Elder Scrolls in a D&D situation. I think she'd love that.
They did just many years ago. It was called Neverwinter Nights.
Yeah, that's right. But that was like a PC game, right?
Yeah.
So that's why we've never played that. But we've looked into it because we thought that sounded interesting.
Has she played any of the Elder Scrolls stuff?
Oh, yeah, all of it.
Okay, because I was going to say that would totally
she loves that
fit
stuff.
Into that kind of thing.
But D&D has... I mean, the stuff that the interactions we've had with D&D video games have been, there's something unique about it compared to, say, Diablo or Elder Scrolls.
See, I don't know. I mean, if you want to say the mythology, the settings are special to you, that's great, and they're good. I mean, nowadays the default, I believe, is the Forgotten Realms one. And that's a good setting. And if you're like, that's what I like, that's like saying, I like this book.
That's true.
I'm not going to argue that. But if we're talking about the system, I mean, Craig, get on the blog and tell me about this. What is there specifically to recommend any of the D&D systems, like, oh, they're really good at this as opposed to most games?
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, don't get me wrong. It's a perfectly competent system. Mm-hmm. But I guess I don't... It's not that exciting. I mean, if somebody's like, you want to play D&D, I'm not like, fuck you. But if somebody's like, you want to never play D&D, I'm like, yeah, sure, that's fine too.
The Baldur's Gate games were Forgotten Realms, if I recall.
Yes.
Now, but then we would play like, there were games that were almost identical in how they looked and the mechanics and everything else, but they were set in...
Norrath, the EverQuest games. I think that's just the company, because Norrath was EverQuest, and that's not D&D.
No, but you... but we didn't like it as much. I mean,
Oh, really?
Yeah, we enjoyed playing those games because they were so similar. But yeah. But for whatever reason, all of the details of the characters and the enemies and the just general feel of it, we liked the
Baldur's Gate ones.
Yeah, better.
That's interesting.
A lot better.
By the way, for people who are in the know about stuff, the Baldur's Gate he's talking about is the series of PlayStation games, of console games.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with Baldur's Gate, the PC game
that came before, right?
Recent remake of that. Though set in the same place, they are totally very different.
Well, and we enjoyed playing...
As somebody who played both of those.
We enjoyed playing Diablo 3. It was very similar to those Baldur's Gate games. Yeah, Champions of Norrath games. Very similar, and we enjoyed it for that reason. But still, we would prefer the Forgotten Realms for... And I can't even tell you why. Because, like you said, it's so similar. Why would you even be able to... Or, like...
Well, if you like the setting, I mean, that's a...
But the differences are so subtle, I'm not even sure I can tell you precisely what was different about it.
You're just such a TSR fanboy. Wizards of the Coast lackey.
I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is.
And again, I want to specify, there's nothing wrong with D&D. There's nothing remarkable either. And it's...
No, I don't suppose there is.
Yeah, I don't get it. Craig, enlighten me. Get on the blogs, magicaltalkinghead.com, and tell me. Or any of the rest of you, except Azertellan. I don't want him to talk.
Although I think
he's a Loch Ness monster.
I think I like the Dragon Age stuff probably the best, honestly, now that I think about it. There's just something about the whole idea. A lot of the ideas they have are just so interesting.
They are interesting. I don't like them. And I think it may be the same thing why I'm not super crazy about Game of Thrones either. I think too much rigid social hierarchy and feudalism, which tends to turn me off.
Sure.
Which is interesting because when you get into like Asian versions and folklore and stuff like that, where like in a lot of Chinese folklore, there's a lot of hierarchy and bureaucracy and all that,
right.
Including in the afterlife and things like that. And I love that stuff. I eat that shit up. So I'm not sure what the difference is there. But, like, I remember the same thing. I never got into the Anne McCaffrey Pern books because Pern was too rigidly feudal of a society, and I hated that. I don't know.
I am interested. I mean, if someone asked me if I wanted to do a D&D campaign, I think I'd be interested in it.
Yeah, we just had, and then we switched to Dungeon World, and then we're playing Gamma World. But it's based on the D20 modern system, so now I'm playing D20 again. That being said, I'm not sure I've rolled a die yet, and we've already had two or three sessions.
Well, I don't know if I'd enjoy it too much if there was a lot of number crunching and die rolling. I'm not sure I would enjoy
this
that.
This is the real answer is that while system does matter, I feel it's pretty low on the things that influence the game, and definitely lower than the GM, and lower than the players that you're with. I've always found that to be true. And that's why I don't tend to do a lot of pickup games. I don't tend to go to a lot of conventions. But amongst the people I play with, I'll play anything. Certain stuff interests me more than other stuff, but I'll play. If somebody's like, I want to try this out, I'm like, yo, let's do it.
I'm not sure I would. I mean, I mostly have gotten into it because of my wife. I don't know if at this point, if she was not interested in it or whatever, if I would keep doing it anyway.
I've been very curious of your evolution, because, yeah, when we first became friends, you were very big on how you had no interest in role-playing.
Yeah, I didn't.
Because the idea of pretending to be somebody other than you, had no appeal.
And recently we played a game, I think it was called Soth or whatever.
Soth,
I think you play a cult member and you're trying to bring this elder god over.
Yeah.
So I was even playing a very bad person. You know, just
depending on how you do it, it can work. Some people have trouble with that. My group can't play really bad guys. Like, the closest they can come is, like, a Robin Hood type. They are really not good at it, and they don't like it. And I find, as I'm getting older, I'm less okay with that.
Well, I certainly don't prefer it.
Well, like, now I'm playing Infamous Second Son. It's one of those last games that still has the, you know, karma system.
Sure.
And especially in this game, because it's all about superpowers and stuff, your karma affects what superpowers you get. There's, like, the good guy ones and the bad guy ones.
Right.
I'm playing it good, and it used to be, I'd be like, I'd think about it, and I usually would play it good and be like, if it's good enough, I'll play it again bad. And sometimes I did, and sometimes I didn't. At this point, I didn't even, like, I thought about it for, like, 2 seconds, and I was like, of course I'm going to play good. I won't enjoy playing it evil. At least, there are some games that I'm like, oh, I'm fascinated about how one would approach this, like, from a different moral perspective, or, like, there's whole bits of content that are very different mm-hmm. if you do it. So sometimes, but as I get older, I'm like, no, I'm just not, I'm not so interested in exploring that hypothetical anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly, when given the choice, I can't even imagine picking an evil character unless I'm playing with a whole bunch of other people and nobody else is picking an evil character and there needs to be one.
Yeah.
Then I'll do it.
That was a very successful game I ran years ago. It was a vampire game and it was set in Portland and all of the characters played basically the vampires who ran the city. They were the heads of the clans in their city. So it was a very big, like, power and manipulation game. So there was a lot of secret stuff happening. But one of the big things is before the game started, I had a serious thought about it, and then I picked a player, and I took him somewhere private, and I said, okay, there's something in the game that I want to invite you to do, but I can't tell you what it is until you agree to it.
Mm.
And he was like, okay. And I was like, all right, you are the villain in this game. And he was like, dude! And that was the thing. Like, we had an actual guy, but, like, the person who was masterminding the whole thing was a player character.
Oh, wow.
And it was so fun, because he was involved. In a lot of cases, he didn't know what was going to happen. Like, I gave him some information, and he would send me shit. He's like, I'm going to make this happen. And I'm like, oh. And then it would happen later, and it was like, oh, shit! I'm like, yeah, it's terrible. I love that. So it is really fun when you can have a mole in the game. I always think that's kind of cool.
But yeah, I mean, in the time that we've been doing this, I've played, you know, I played the, in one game, I played the Pied Piper, which was interesting because not long before that, I'd actually had been doing some research into...
Pied piping?
Well, just, you know, there's some debate as to whether or not this person actually existed and did what he's purported
to. Really is?
Oh, yeah.
I just assumed that there was no chance that that was a thing.
No, I mean, there's the town that that everything's supposed to have taken place in. There was a while where, I don't know if it's still true, but there it's documented that for a while, when people would talk about something that happened in the past, and someone would say, well, how long ago was that? Oh, that was probably about 10 years after the children were taken.
Mm.
I mean, that's the way they would measure their time. I want
to start doing that.
I think the prevailing theory is that you know, itinerant performer, which is what the Pied Piper really is, came and when the children were in a vulnerable position, like the parents were at church or something, he took them, and in Russia, people were buying children for some reason, I don't remember, some war happened or something and they didn't have very many kids or whatever, so what someone observed was a lot of last names that are sort of typical around that European town also show up in certain parts of Russia, so they think that that's what happened
in Soviet Russia. Piper Steel. Wait, no, I don't know.
Well, I mean, they don't know if the guy was actually played the flute or whatever.
Yeah,
he was just
an
itinerant entertainer of some kind.
The Pied Kidnapper of Hamelin.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound so good.
Yeah.
You've just put me onto the thing I'm going to start doing now. When people ask me when something happened, I'm going to be like, oh, you know, about 3 years after we all agreed to erase our memories and enter this virtual world.
That's a good idea. Well, what I was saying was, in the game, I played this the Pied Piper, and so I'd already sort of formed in my head the kind of personality this guy would have.
Yeah. And you like to steal children normally anyway.
Yeah, so. Well, and he wasn't a good guy.
No.
But that's, so that's the character I played.
But he was freeing us from children, so that's nice. we gotta wrap this up. So, If you'd like to tell us your best way to steal children, or what's so awesome about D&D, go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com. Tell us about that. Also, go there with whatever else that you want. How much did you love Thor Ragnarok? How much did you have to close your eyes during Justice League? How much of my book have you read? And then, once you've done all that, join us next week.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.